I want to talk a little bit about mine and Wendy's recent holiday, because kind of it's good to remind ourselves of our holiday anyway, just to share one or two photos of that. So if we can start with the first slide doesn't actually come from that holiday, but we'll leave it there for a moment and think about God's rainbow promise. And hopefully the others will pop up for me. I just want to get those up. So as some of you will know, we went away about 3 weeks ago, I suppose. We headed off up to Scotland to drive and basically to car camp our way around the North Coast 500 route. One or two of you have done that. It starts at Inverness. It carries on up the east coast, across the top, down the west coast, as far as a place called Applecross, and then basically it heads back to Inverness, which is more or less the exact route that we did. And it was a really good start to our trip. Good drive up. We didn't camp the first night. We stayed in the relative luxury of a bed and breakfast in Pitlochry, which was not that good, but it was good enough, you know. And then we carried on, and we had a couple of nice days following the route around the east coast of Scotland, enjoying sunshine, a little bit windy, not really any rain to speak of. And we were heading up to John O'Groats on a lovely day. Now, as you go up to John O'Groats, you have a choice. You can either go first to the lighthouse on the extreme sort of northeast of Scotland, which Jane and Peter are about to remind me what it's called. Began with D. Pardon? Yes, Duncansby Head. Yes. So next picture will show this. And here it is. And hopefully you can see that well enough. At Duncansby Head there, we decided to go there first. And on the left-hand picture, you see the sea stacks at Duncansby. Very impressive, you know, very spectacular. On the right, you can see, if you look closely, when the weather started to change. You spot that? See the mist just rolling in. So we enjoyed walking around there, just seeing the sights, and we got back in our car, headed off down the hill to John O'Groats to take the traditional picture, by which time it was like this. And that was pretty much the view. Okay, the angle is looking up to the sky, but there wasn't much that you could see behind if you lowered it down. And it didn't immediately deteriorate from there. But we went then to, I think it's Dunnet Head, where it very definitely was misty and we couldn't see a thing, apart from just about the lighthouse that was there, the most northernmost point on the British mainland, and therefore the Scottish mainland too. That was that. Worse was to follow, it has to be said. Wendy and I actually camped in our car. It's a big car, so that wasn't a problem, with a tent on the back. And next one is an example. That is the tent that we bought. It's not a picture we took because I hadn't taken one that was suitable. But that gives you an idea of how this tent should look, and it sort of attaches to the tailgate of the car. And if we so chose, we could slide out of the tailgate in the morning or slide in at night to our bed, our mattress, quite comfy in the car actually. And we could slide out into that tent where all our kind of our table and chairs, our cooking equipment, all the stuff that wouldn't fit in the car would go, really. Not fit in the car while we're sleeping in it anyway. We arrived at a place called Sango Sands, which was about as far north and west as you can go, or the roads will take you anyway. And lovely campsite, but the weather was changing. The wind was getting up. It wasn't raining. But we went out the first night, put our tent up, attached to the car. It's flapping around a bit at night, I must admit. I heard it. It didn't disturb my sleep. And the next afternoon, we went out for an hour or so, and we came back to see our tent looking like that. Now, you saw the other one, didn't you? It was a nice sort of dome shape. This is the tent poles on one side, not being the concave they should be, but I'm sorry, convex they should be, but being very much concave on this side. And I said to Wendy, I think we'd better take the tent down, because the wind was only getting up and the 45-mile-an-hour winds that had been promised for later that evening had clearly come early. It was like that. But the trouble was, all our stuff was inside it. So I did what anyone would have done. I sent Wendy in to get that out. And, well, I held on, really, to this tent because it was in danger of literally blowing out of the ground and a couple hundred yards that way, the cliff tops, really, over which it might have gone. And so we did our best to get everything out. The problem then is what you do with what you've got out. And particularly, bearing in mind that you're sleeping in the car at night, where do you put all the stuff? So some of it went under the car, what didn't really matter. Some of it we were able to store in the car, basically in the front seats, just piling it up. And then we hunkered down eventually for the night. We went elsewhere for a meal, didn't we? I think, yeah, we did. We got by, really. And it was, I think you can safely say, an adventure. We would rather not have had those high winds. We would rather not have been forced to take down our tent. There is a destructive power in the wind, isn't there? And I guess, you know, mostly we would not wish to be caught out in stormy conditions such, I mean, even walking, and this was hard enough, but trying to sort of get stuff out. And then, I didn't mention the taking the tent down, how do you take the tent down without it blowing away? And I mean, we were almost throwing ourselves on the tent, weren't we, on the ground, Wendy, to keep it, you know, on the ground whilst we scrunched it up and managed to kind of get it out of the way and then take the ground sheet up, which you can see a bit of there. That was fairly easy bit, that one. Anyway, so that was what we did. But the thing is, isn't it, that there are things that can be very destructive in nature, but that we can't do without. Because the wind that was pushing our car out of shape and threatening to rip it out of the ground is also the wind that fills sails, next picture please, Margaret, and turns wind turbines and does all sorts of other things that are positive. So the strength of the wind, which became quite a challenge to us, is something that actually provides for us, doesn't it? I mean, for sailing ships over the years, it provides the impetus to push them forward. For wind turbines, it's powering a lot of our devices now, isn't it? And topping up our electricity supply more and more. The next morning, we woke up to, well, we could hear the rain in the night, really. We slept pretty well, you know, in our car. At least it was dry. It stayed cool with the aircon that we left on. And that was good, but it had been raining all night, and we got out of the car into basically standing water all across the campsite. Lovely. And it had been quite torrential, and it still was chucking it down. As I, this time, nobly, I did send Wendy off to seek shelter, and whilst I said, let me pack the car. And to be honest, it was easier just one of us getting wet rather than two. So we sorted it, and we would rather that it hadn't rained like that. And water, again, can be immensely destructive, can't it? We think of the terrible scenes from Texas yesterday. Those people, families, really, have been literally washed away by floods. And yet, the same destructive power of water is the water that brings scenes of immense beauty, and we'll see that next, I think. And, I mean, the waterfalls in Scotland, apart from the one in Smoo Cave, where there was no water because we got there before the rain, Peter knows where it is, were hugely beautiful. And those are just a couple of them. The one on the right, Wendy chose not to come. It was starting to rain again, but that was called the Wailing Widow Falls. I could see why. I thought I was determined not to leave her a wailing widow by falling in, getting swept away, but it was beautiful. And the water that falls from our skies, of course, brings immense beauty, doesn't it? Like that we find in the next slide, hopefully. Yeah. Oh, you can just about see that, can't you? So after we'd taken our tent down, this was before the rain of the night, really, that was the rainbow that we saw. You can see, I deliberately left my shadow in there and the end of the car in so you can see where we were. You might say, where are all the other tents, mightn't you? And in my notes, by the way, I referred to this part of Cafe Church as a tent's tale. See what I did there? But it was lovely to see the rainbow. And we wouldn't get that, would we, without the rain. Earlier in the year, Katie and myself and some others from the Methodist circuit team were at the conference and one of the speakers was Kate Botley, who appears on Songs of Praise and all of that. And she was very good, actually. And she referred, as I'm going to now, to her favourite theologian, Dolly Parton, who said this: the way I see it, if you want the rainbow, you've got to put up with the rain. I don't think she used this quote, actually, but she used something else. But I kind of like that when I looked it up. The way I see it, if you want the rainbow, you've got to put up with the rain. And there are things that are good, aren't there? But we would only have them because of something else that has been a challenge to us. Something that may even have been bad in our lives. We only get the good perhaps because we've had the bad. It doesn't justify what's bad, but it may help us to overcome it. For sports fans and England fans in particular, one positive of the rain is that the test match has been delayed. I just thought, I wonder, but because we are facing a heavy defeat if it goes the distance, I think. But no, we shouldn't wish for that, should we? But anyway, going to read to you now from Genesis, because whenever we think about rainbows, we have to go back to Noah, really, don't we? And it's probably a story is that story that you all know. Hang on a sec, I'm going to find it in my own notes, I hope. Yeah. So Genesis chapter 9, verses 1 to 3 and 8 to 17 is where we're going to go. And I think you will know the story, and let's just have a recap here before I read this particular section. About Noah, God's heart's grieved because, you know, he looks at the earth, all the hearts of women and men seem to be evil. There's just one man who is righteous, in God's eyes, that is Noah. And so God, resolves, to do away with the earth, basically, do away with the population. But he also provides a way for life to begin again. And so, Noah and his wife and their three sons and the wives of their three sons, and although it doesn't say so, presumably any children that there might have been at that time, are told to build an ark, to get two of each kind of every creature onto the ark, to go and shut themselves in, or God shuts themselves into the ark as the rain falls and the waters rise until the whole earth is flooded. And of course, that goes on for some time. I mean, we probably had rain for about 40 minutes, but 40 days and 40 nights would be a long, long time, wouldn't it? And the story goes, the earth is flooded until such time as God brings that to an end. And I'm very much abbreviating the story there. And the ark settles on dry land once again, and Noah and co. are able to come out of the ark. And so at the end of all of that, it says in our reading, God blessed Noah and his sons and told them to have many children to repopulate the earth. So, as I said, a new start. All wild animals and birds and fish will be afraid of you, God told him, for I have placed them in your power, and they are yours to use for food in addition to grain and vegetables. Then God told Noah and his sons, I solemnly promise you and your children and the animals you brought with you, all these birds and cattle and wild animals, that I will never again send another flood to destroy the earth. And I seal this promise with this sign. I have placed my rainbow in the clouds as a sign of my promise until the end of time to you and to all the earth. When I send clouds over the earth, the rainbow will be seen in the clouds, and I will remember my promise to you and to every being that never again will the floods come and destroy all life. For I will see the rainbow in the cloud and remember my eternal promise to every living being on the earth. Thanks, Margaret. Could we go back to the other PowerPoints now, please, and the next slide on from that, from the one where we left off, that is, which I think should just be a happiness scale. That's all right. There you go. So just something for us to look at for a moment, but I could have described it, but it's easier putting it on the screen, isn't it? And I wonder, on a scale of 1 to 10, I'm not going to ask you to reveal where you're at, but I wonder how you are feeling at this time. You could be really miserable, really difficult times, really unhappy, or maybe you're very unhappy about certain things. Maybe you find yourself somewhere in the middle of that, you know, maybe sort of a little bit unhappy, but, you know, not too bad. Maybe you're ecstatically happy, although no one looks it this morning, I have to say. But, and we will vary, won't we, through life, different feelings of happiness or unhappiness. And there are things in our world and in our lives that we should not be happy about, but there are other things that we should be happy about. So, for example, Wendy and I are very happy about the fact that our younger daughter is getting married at the end of August. And on the 31st, the day after the wedding, I think maybe the same day, I'll say, job done. Off our hands now, you know. But I doubt that they will be. Are our children ever off our hands? I'm not sure that they are. So there's happiness, there's unhappiness, but, you know, to a certain extent, we can't do that much about whether we are happy or whether we're not, because often it's affected by our external factors, isn't it? Things that are going on in our lives. And much in our lives is not good. But I just want to point us initially to this story of Noah. And I must admit, not all of my thoughts are fully formed this morning. I was thinking of that this during the week. I was thinking about it again this morning, deciding I'd make a quick walk around the estate while it was dry. So I did that, and I was sort of just recapping in my mind what I'd been thinking about here. But I was just imagining Noah. I mean, he's had all of this rain, and he and his family have been desperately waiting for the rain to stop and the flood waters to recede. And that happens, but then it must have started to rain again, mustn't it, when you think about it? And Noah might have been thinking, oh, rats, not again. It must have started to rain again, otherwise how would he have seen the rainbow? Yeah? And then God explains, I solemnly promise that never again will I send another flood to destroy the earth. And I seal this promise with this sign. I have placed my rainbow in the clouds as a sign of my promise until the end of time to you and to all the earth. Personally, I think that because this is part of creation and also part of the laws of physics, isn't it? Rainbows come about, that Noah will have seen rainbows before. But on this specific occasion, God speaks and God gives a meaning to that rainbow. And he reminds Noah of the promise to you and to every being. I showed you that rainbow that we saw on our campsite. And I mean, how many of us here, how many of you, I wonder, smile when you see a rainbow? Hands up. I mean, I'm not going to pick out the ones that aren't up, but I think probably it just has that feeling, doesn't it? It is the thing of beauty. We smile as we see it. Wendy and I did go out that evening. We managed to get a meal at the only local pub, I think, to where we were staying. And as we were driving over a couple of miles and just pulled off the lane of what passed for a main road in that part of Scotland, and there was this awesome rainbow again, you know, brighter than the one that you saw up there earlier. there was this rainbow again. And we just stopped, as did another couple who were just drawing up to go to the pub as well for a meal, to just admire it and take some photographs. And it made us smile. And I think as people of faith, who know the story of Noah, we smile all the more because it's a reminder, isn't it, I think, the rainbow, of God saying to us that in whatever situation you find yourself, whatever you are going through at this time, I am with you. I think that's what the rainbow is saying, isn't it? God is saying, it's a sign of my promise until the end of time to you and to all the earth. I will remember. I will remember you, says God. So that's just a little something about the rainbow. It makes us smile. Something that may not make us smile, and with good reason, is to think of the figure of a man brutally whipped to within an inch of his life, beaten and nailed to a cross. That probably isn't something, is it, that's destined to make us smile. And whilst we might think of our own lives, much in our own lives is not good. It's not good at this particular time, maybe, or at other times. All of us can think of times which have not been good in our lives, which have been a struggle to get through. When we look at the cross, of course, it's a reminder that the cross was not good for Jesus. Really, was it? Humanly speaking, Jesus sweat drops of blood over the thought of being on that cross when he was in the Garden of Gethsemane. Jesus cried out in agony on the cross, my God, why have you forsaken me? It was not good for Jesus. But it is good for us. And that's what I wanted to say, really. It is good for us. And of course, we have the words of Philippians which remind us that Jesus was obedient. He was obedient to the Father's will. He was obedient even to death upon the cross. The cross is a sign that God remembers us. Going to a couple of other scriptures in Hebrews, Hebrews chapter 11, there's that big roll call of the heroes of the faith, Old Testament heroes of the faith, basically. And chapter 11 starts by saying, now faith is confidence in what we hope for, assurance about what we do not see. This is what the ancients were commended for. And it goes through this roll call, including the mention of Noah being, and at the end of that it says these were all commended for their faith, yet none of them received what had been promised, since God had planned something better for us, so that only together with us would they be made perfect. And then chapter 12 starts, therefore, since we are surrounded by such a crowd of great witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles. Let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. Often I have hung on to that perseverance thing, and yes, I need to persevere in what I'm doing, in what I'm going through. And then it says, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross. As I said, I don't suppose Jesus was happy about the cross, not happy on the cross. Happiness is not the same as joy. In joy, we might be happy, but we might also be sad. We might also be challenged. But joy really is looking at the cross of Jesus and knowing that through the cross, Jesus is ultimately making all things well. Well for us, well for our world. And it says, Jesus endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. And says, consider him who endured such opposition from sinners so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. So I want to remind us that the cross is a sign that God remembers us whatever. And the empty cross reminds us that Jesus is with us, doesn't it? Because Jesus is risen. He is risen. So really my message this morning is to say that whatever you are going through at this time, however hard it is, well, to hang in there, but to remember also that God is with you. Remember, God is with you in all that you go through. And fix your eyes upon Jesus. So let's pray for a moment, then we'll come to our final song. Then we'll probably dodge the showers and try and get home. So, Lord God, we thank you for those twin signs that we've been thinking about this morning, the sign of the rainbow as a reminder of your promise, something that makes us smile, maybe lifts us so often to a better place, a reminder that you always make a way to save your people. And Lord, we also thank you for the sign of the cross, which reminds us that you have endured everything so that we would not have to. And we thank you that through that cross we can know forgiveness of sins. Through the cross we can have, we can find grace to forgive others. Through the cross we can have hope that things will be better in this life. And we can know and have that hope that there is a life to come in which all shall be well. So Lord, help us to persevere. Help us to trust you in all things. And Lord, in moments of quiet, we just lay before you those situations that we would want you to intervene in. We offer our prayers to you in the quiet. And we ask, O Lord, that you hear our prayer and have mercy. Let's just conclude our prayers in the words that Jesus taught us to pray, saying, Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power and the glory, for ever and ever. Amen.